afternoon, the fact that we know what direction we're going to go and we know what we're going to do. The difficult problem, probably the most difficult one that around everything has centered and why everything is going to be coming out next week, is the budget. The governor, as you know, for 3 years now has been telling us that we're broke, doom and gloom, hold back on money. And then this year, he submitted a mammoth budget. You know, it can only be called an election year budget, a $100 million increase. Budget last year was about $352 million of general fund money, and the budget, the best we can determine, the governor gave us his budget in a series of bills this year so that he could say he only gave us one for $389, but it's about $461 million. The figures that the governor has been using for years, and they're reasonably somewhere in the ballpark of being correct, have indicated that if we spend more than, say, $420 million, we definitely will be in the hole in 1977. Unless he has some large oil sale or something of this sort. He refuses to tell us whether or not he intends to have an oil sale. So I think the legislature, the House, we want to talk about the Senate. I think the House will come into the budget under the $420 million figure. It means that you've got to cut $41 million out of the governor's budget, that some people who plan on or anticipate receiving some money are probably not going to receive it. The big items that are facing us, the particularly big items, are the impact monies and the state employees. And I'd like to say a few words about the state employees and what the legislature, what the House will probably do. We passed several years ago the union negotiation law, so the various state employees have formed various union groups. And of course the biggest one, we received the package of bills on that about a month ago. We've received a second one since then for another $3.5 million. Right now we're looking at a $50 million cost for state employee pay increase. Now that's not pay, that's pay increase. And we're looking, as I say, the governor's requested figure of $461 million. So it's a little better than 10% of what the governor's requested for a total budget. It's difficult to tell how many state employees we have. That you know, it should sound stupid, but it just depends who you got before the committee. We got somewhere between 10 and 15,000 state employees. I think the governor's budget document shows we have 9,000. But suppose you have, say you have 10,000, and I don't know if you've looked at it this way or not, but a $50 million pay increase for 10,000 employees is $5,000 per employee. I don't want to get in too deep trouble here, but the state employees are certainly entitled to a raise. And they're certainly going to get a raise. But I think, again, insofar as the House is concerned, it will not be the type that the governor has submitted to the legislature. And from a political viewpoint, that's a tough decision and a hard decision to make. In the House side, as been mentioned, we have a coalition. We have, as a finance chairman, a Democrat. I wish he were a Republican. I think he's a fine fellow. And I think that he and his committee are going to be willing to bite the bullet. Well, I'm convinced they are. And that means, as I've indicated, cutting a good number of items in the state employee pay will be one of them. I should say, just a short aside, various members of the House, Republicans who wanted to be here today, who aren't here for various reasons. Helen Byrne is chairman of Health, Education, Social Services. She has to be there to meet the teachers who are flying in tomorrow. The Finance Committee is not here because, by George, they're working. We have to have that budget by about Wednesday or Thursday, and they will be working today and tomorrow and Sunday. So Mr. Hogan specifically wanted me to mention that he intended to be here, but he could not be. The area of impact has been one which has also caused some concern. The people who are going to be impacted have an idea that it'll be, well, they've asked for $100 million, or one group have. And the legislature, I think, by and large, feels that's way out of line. I think the legislature does desire to allow local governments specifically impacted by the pipeline some financial relief, and I think the state's going to do that. Some people argue, however, the other side of the coin is that those communities which are going to be impacted in a few years from now will be much wealthier than the other communities in the rest of the state because of the substantial increased tax base that they will have and the substantial increased number of people. So I don't know the exact way it's going to come out. There are two or three possible ways of writing impact legislation, but I am certain that there will be some money distributed to the communities along the pipeline specifically to help them with impact. And I am certain that there will be a means and manner for them to apply for additional funds in the ensuing years, couple of years. The area of disclosure is one that's been a knotty one. The Senate has passed a bill. I think the House will pass a bill very similar to the Senate's, and I would hope that we'd pass that by Thursday or Friday this week. It seems like, again, the public is demanding disclosure, and there are, of course, many of us who feel disclosure won't tell the public what the public wants to know because there's so many ways of getting around it. I noticed listening to Mr. Hickel's statement on radio the other night, he had some great qualifications of the conflict of interest. I do too, Wally, and there isn't going to be a conflict of interest bill passed the House, as far as I'm concerned. The area of energy is one of the areas, a little later I want to talk a little about the administration, but the area of energy is one where this administration has really been pitiful. We've had absolutely no drive, no initiative, no nothing. You know, the state of Alaska has tremendous energy potential, but our administration, current governor, is sitting around waiting for someone else to make a move. We're going to try to pass a few resolutions to try to burn him a little, kick him a little, tell him to move along, let's get something done. I don't know to what extent he'll follow it. He'll follow it if the public picks it up, because he does respond to the public. As Speaker of the House, or as a presiding officer of any legislative body, it seems to be early in the session, you've got to try to get the feel of the majority of your people, decide what it is they want to do. You've got to try to put together an overall package. You have to look in terms of the dividing the public up, say we've got to see what labor desires and see what we feel would be appropriate. We've got to see what the education desires of the teachers, or business, or the fishermen, the loggers, and try to come out with a well-rounded package. I think we will have a reasonably well-rounded package by the time the session is over. Now, the purpose of this convention, I assume, is to lay out some guidelines for candidates to follow party policy. It seems it's also the job of this convention to dedicate itself to going home to find some outstanding candidates for office. It's certainly one of the jobs of this convention and the participants to dedicate themselves to go home and raise some money and to produce some workers for the coming campaign. Now, for those of us in active government today, it appears extremely important that the Republicans in this state do an outstanding job and win control of the state House and the state Senate and the governorship and the U.S. Senate seat and the congressional seat. I'm sure that all of us, and I know that I, feel very inadequate or unable to convey to you fully the strength of my conviction of what will happen if we don't win this fall. Now, we have an executive branch of this government which exhibits a complete lack of direction, a complete lack of initiative, a complete lack of stability, and a complete lack of belief in anything except how to win elections. We have an administration which has dark clouds of questionable practices hanging over its head, and the methods of issuing contracts for all types of services, most of them negotiated, for items such as the use of state's computers without pay and for purposes of a particular commissioner. It has a reputation of influence peddling within the state government. We have an administration that's only sense of direction, if you can call it that, is do what is necessary to win the next election. This administration constantly wets its finger, holds it in the air to determine which direction the wind is blowing, and then goes hell-bent in that direction. Now, the best example of this, I think, is in the session of 1972. The administration put the finger in the wind and said, beat hell out of oil. So in 1972, we passed a bunch of restrictive legislation which brought the oil industry to a halt. In fall of 1973, the administration had to call us back to repeal those laws. And that's what we did, because the administration decided they had to have that pipeline going so they had a good, strong economy in the fall of 74. Another example, I believe, is the administration in Juneau for the last 3 years has preached this doom and gloom concept. It's tailored its expenditures to meet its tailored revenue projections. Now, all of a sudden, election year, the governor says, we got plenty of money, spend $100 million. And this one is really interesting because of the fact that the House Finance Chairman is a good, loyal Democrat. The governor has refused to tell us, including our finance chairman, how he's going to support that kind of a budget based upon his own revenue projections. He just clams up when you ask him where the money's coming from. The answer, obviously, as far as he's concerned, is something like this. I don't have to give you an answer to that. The only thing I have to do is to spend money to get reelected in November of 1974. And that's what we're facing. He's bungled our investments, he's bungled our loan programs, and I can go on and on. I do, of course, want to add that in 1974, it's very important that we gain control of the Senate and the House in the state. It takes both to do a good job. Looking at the existing Democrat ranks and those who have seniority and who would become the leadership in the next legislature if the Democrats were elected, I can tell you it's not good news. I want to say a word about good candidates. I think they are extremely important. They're that with which you cannot do without in winning elections, and they're so important to good government. Now, every person in the United States should consider it his duty to spend a certain amount of time in public service. Now, there are many ways to spend time in public service, but one of them is to be a candidate or to be a member of government. I've got to tell you, there are many more pleasant ways of living. An elected official who works hard, is reasonably competent, will receive a tremendous amount of abuse from the public. He will be accused of being drunk, being evil, of lining his pockets with graft. So a good candidate is really one who is capable and dedicated and maybe a little tough-skinned. I remember particularly this session, I got down from the podium the only time this year and talked for about 35 minutes in favor of a resolution endorsing this Canadian bank. I think I've received three letters, or letters and wires, in regard to the Canadian bank, and all three of them are giving me hell because I was opposed to the Canadian bank. I have to have one letter, one wire, nothing, except those that I was opposed. And I fought as hard as I could, I'm sorry. Now, I'm not worried about the effects of Watergate on the Alaska election. I think Alaskans have always voted very individualistically and will continue to do so. I think the public is suspicious of politicians. I think this will give an advantage to the non-politician in this election year. As an aside, I might say that I, for one, am not going to desert the President of the United States. He's in a tough spot. He's going to have to extricate himself. In the best of circumstances, he will convince the public that he has done no wrong. In the worst of circumstances, we're on a sinking ship, and I'm going to be the last one to abandon it, if ever. He's been a president who has not wet his finger and held it to the wind and changed directions every time the wind has. He's evaluated the situation. He's proceeded in a manner which he's felt has been the best way. Nobody's always right, but I think he's done an outstanding job. Well, write a good platform, write good resolutions, dedicate yourselves to finding good candidates, money and workers. It's your future that's at stake. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Tom. We certainly appreciate those words, and that's the direction in which we're going. And I want to say for myself that I sure appreciate the leadership that you have shown in the House of Representatives in the last 2 years. And I hope that if bigger and better things don't call you, that you'll be back there to lead us for another 2 years. We'd like to now call upon the chairman of the Credentials Committee, Hope Alexander. Can't do anything until we get a permanent role. Huh? And then I'll lose them all. Okay. Well, on our program, we have an agenda that's called a state chairman's report, and I might just as well take that 5 minutes now to try and give you an outline of just what the party has done in the last 2 years and bring you up to date on our objectives and the party plan. And of course, I realize that these are going to be redirected. I'll give you a report of what we've done, and of course, I believe that most of you have followed our position from the McKinley Convention. But I took over the reins of the Republican Party of Alaska on the 6th of April of 1972 with a convention staring the party in the face just not more than 6 weeks away at McKinley Park. And the McKinley Convention, the time frame there was put together so that the McKinley Convention could be as successful as possible. And I know that some people had problems with the plumbing, some people had problems with the heat, some people had problems with their bed partners. But other than that, why, I believe that the McKinley Convention went very well and that we came out of there a unified force and that we were able to go forward to victory in 72, and that's what we're trying to do and we're going to do in this convention in 1974. The McKinley Convention, as you all know, rewrote the rules, and we had to, because of the train schedules, we had to leave it up to the Interim Rules Committee to get together and to go back and to redefine and define the intent of the McKinley Convention. And under the able leadership of Steve DeLisio, while we were able to come out not necessarily on the time frames that we had established, but we were able to come forth with a viable, broad-based party. And I would like to report to you that today that, as we see it, we're about 8 times stronger with participating people in the Republican Party than we were 2 years ago. And I think that that's a big plus for the McKinley Convention. We went from the McKinley Convention into the organization of the National Convention, and we had a full delegation. And although we had at times at the convention some watery eyes because of the tear gas that was in the air at Miami, we were able to get in and out of the convention hall with our delegates. And how we did it is we hired one of these small 22-passenger airport buses, and we required that it be an ex-Marine from the Korean War who was a tank driver. And there were times when he took us over grassy spots and got us around through the back gate, and it was an experience, and particularly for us from the country up here, to see that kind of reaction on the national level and the marches and the protests. It was really an experience, and I would like to say that I think it was rather a frightening experience for the part of some of us that have lived in the West and in the North particularly. But the National Convention, we had good participation. Our secretary, Joni Crossan, was on the platform, and she got national recognition by being on camera for 25 minutes, giving a portion of the national platform, and we were real proud of her. And when she came on, why, the Alaska delegation was really roaring it up, and I think we got the whole convention upset for a few minutes on that. And I think Joni did a great job at the convention. We then came home with full fight, and we went into the general election, and of course you all were a part of that effort, and we didn't have the numbers type organization that we hoped to get into as we go forward. But with the general election at hand, and we really fought a good battle, and although we tried to spur the last ditch stand for Congressman Young after the disaster of Nick Begich, but we were unsuccessful, and we came back a united organization, and we put together a special election, which was held on the 6th of March, And we were able to bring that to a firm conclusion, and the Republican Party of the state of Alaska moved forward for the first time as a unified effort in an election situation, and the party people throughout the state, from one end to the other, was really the organizational structure of that election. And Don says, I don't want my own organization, I want to be a Republican candidate, and we made it that way, and that's how we won it. After the special election, we of course had our time frames all mixed up, and you know, we were supposed to have had certain meetings done by the 15th of May and certain meetings done by the 15th of August, and we were supposed to have our central committee meeting on the 23rd of August, which we did, but we were able to pull those time frames together, be able to come forward out of the central committee with a certification of the rules, and then go forward to putting the party organization together. We made the call for this convention, which subsequently triggered the call for the 20 district conventions. I managed to get to a majority of those conventions. It was heartening to see the people in the Mat-Su Valley, for example, where in past years the district meetings were just a handful, but the importance of now being there, having their own organization in that particular area, just ballooned it, and they had full participation of their delegate strength. And I think that this is the thing that we're after. And of course, this is the first year out of the chute for the new organization. We have a lot of rough edges that we have to pick up. We're finding out in our credentials that this is the case, but I think that it's because there's a lot of newness in the party, and this, I think, can be transferred into the election here, that the newness of the Republican Party of Alaska, a new party going forward to election 74, is going to be the thing that's going to spur us on to the objectives and the political plan that your new central committee, after this convention's over, with your advice and consent in your committees, is going to really make us a majority party 2 years away from this year, and guarantee it 2 years and 4 years away from now. I think that pretty well will tie it up. I see the credentials committee is starting to come in, so I had planned to go into the objectives of the party and to give you a brief view of the political plan that we've developed over the last 2 years, but because of time, and I realize that some of you wanted to go on that cruise, we have to be out of this room by 7. Before I ask for the Credentials Committee report, I would like to recognize our former Governor Keith Miller and his lovely wife, Diane. Now I'd like to call on Hope Alexander, the chairman of the Credentials Committee, to give her report. Hope.
District 2, possibility of 5, 4 seated. You can't hear me? There we go. District 2, 4 seated delegates. District 3, 5 seated delegates. District 4, 10.
As I was sitting there, I had another morbid thought. Wouldn't it be real neat to see a streak down through the center aisle by C.R. Lewis? It's my pleasure and honor to bring before you a man who has brought great credit on himself and the Republican Party, taking care of the urgent needs of Alaska and Washington. His happy smile was always there, whether up north on a riverboat, or on the Capitol steps, on snowshoes, bottom side up. A man who knows that our elephant's trunk can be used to offset a Democratic majority. Please give a big hand for Congressman Don Young.
thank you, Duke, and Governor Hickel, Governor Miller, Senator Lewis, Chairman Jack, John, Edith, and all those distinguished people, Hermely at the head table, Diane, and friends. Before I go in my prepared text, and I do have a prepared text tonight, I apologize for that because many times I like to wing it. The last time I winged it, I broke my wing, so I thought I'd better read it tonight. I come back before this group today, or tonight, with a great deal of sentimentality for Sitka, primarily, because this is where I kicked off my campaign, little beknownst to me, 3 years ago. And also where I had the privilege of becoming infatuated with a town, a city of Alaska, like all the cities of Alaska, that I think abounds with talent. I know that there were those that raised an eyebrow when it was said that the convention would be held in Sitka. I heard many excuses why it wouldn't be successful. But I knew in my heart, because of their effort and their dedication and their hospitality, not only the Democrats and the Republicans, but the Sitkans have the ability to convey to Alaskans that this is their city, they're a part of Alaska, and I'm proud. And as I listened to the singers tonight, I got a little bit tingly, and I think you did too. This is a great time. I'd like to make a very major announcement tonight. I've thought a great deal of time and length and have watched those that have filed for office and with a great deal of enthusiasm. And I've finally reached a decision that for the betterment of Alaska that I'm going to run for the seat I held now, you see. Which brings to my mind a little story the other day. They asked me what I was going to do, and I said I was going to run for the Senate. And they said, what do you mean? I said, no, not really. I'm going to run for the House. And someone said, you mean you're a slow streaker? The streaking thing has really got out of hand, believe me. You know, I've been waiting all night for the streaker, and I haven't seen one, you know. Oh, we were watching television the other night back east, and they had 11 o'clock newscast, a live television newscast, and here came a streaker. It was better than the news they had, let me tell you. It is a pleasure to be here, and it's a double pleasure for me to see so many new delegates to the Republican Party. And I know that they will give us all the benefit of their new ideas and enthusiasm to help the Republican Party make Alaska, our Alaska, the greatest state in the Union. As I mentioned, I remembered the last state convention held at McKinley where I believe he lost his false teeth. You as delegates took an unprecedented step and nominated one man for the Alaska's only seat in the Congress of the United States. I was that man, and with your united help, I became Alaskan's only member of the House of Representatives. But this is not a time to sit back and bask in the pride of our past achievements. It is a time to take stock of our state, of our party, and of ourselves, and then decide what kind of Alaska we want to build for our children in the future. Let's not kid ourselves why we are here tonight. We're all Republicans. We believe in the basic philosophies of the Republican Party. And we're here now, today, yesterday, and tomorrow, and Sunday, to further those beliefs by achieving Republican victories in November. And let me say here and now, if we put this team together right, we shall have a Republican Party in Alaska in November. But it has to be put together. I was talking to Edith, our national committee woman, a moment ago, and sometimes I consider myself a fanatic on the subject of Alaska and where the Republican Party stands. I believe with all my heart that this party has the philosophy that is necessary that the state of Alaska can overcome those problems the rest of the United States faces today. This convention today and tomorrow and yesterday is the convention that will determine the destiny of Alaska forever. Let me tell you, this coming election is the election of all elections. It is the election that will decide whether we have a state of independent people, a state of people that can decide their own destiny, or whether we become a state of agency bureaucracy. I can say now, and I know you have heard it before at this convention, and you've heard me to say it before, but I am going to repeat this series of statements made by, I think, one of the greatest men in history, Abraham Lincoln. And Clyde, let me ask for your forgiveness, but I am quoting not Clyde Lewis tonight, but Abraham Lincoln and his comments on what he thought our philosophy as a party should be. And if you will bear with me, you cannot bring about prosperity by discouraging thrift. You cannot strengthen the weak by weakening the strong. You cannot help the wage earner by pulling down the wage payer. You cannot further the brotherhood of man by encouraging class hatred. You cannot help the poor by discouraging the rich. You cannot establish sound security by spending more than you earn. You cannot build character and courage by taking away man's unicity of independence. And you cannot help any man permanently by doing for him what he could and should do for himself. Mr. Lincoln's remarks were made more than 100 years ago, yet they have withstood the time, the test of time. They are as appropriate today as they were then, at a time when our nation was far more divided and troubled than it is now. Still, we must be aware and concerned about national affairs. Judging by news accounts, the only thing that has happened in Washington over the past year is Watergate. Wedged between the revelations have been reports that the Democrat-controlled Congress is working hard to reassert its power and leadership in our nation's affairs. Yet for all the news about Watergate scandals and the continuing commentary about the president, the opinion polls over the past months have continued to show that the American people have more faith and trust in a beleaguered president than they do in the Congress itself. Why? I'll tell you why. For the past 40 of those years, the Democrats have controlled Congress. Under their so-called leadership, this nation has gone into debt to the tune of over $300 billion, your dollars. Under their so-called leadership, we have found ourselves in a position where the courts have been forced to set important national policy, taking months and sometimes years to untangle the conflicting clauses of federal law. Under their so-called leadership, we have heard time and again how Congress was going to reassert its authority and take back the reins of government. Yet every piece of major legislation we have taken up in the past years pushes more and more power and authority to the presidency and executive branch of government. Under their so-called leadership, we've had an unending stream of accusations and charges about the president and his administration in regard to the Watergate scandal. These so-called leaders of Congress seem to prefer trying the president in the press rather than the floor of the House where it belongs. And for your information tonight, I am preparing a resolution that will relieve all the Judiciary Committee members of any other duties other than the Judiciary Committee itself. They have prolonged this action for 6 months, and they're going to continue to prolong that action until we, the public, make them take definite steps one way or the other. As I've said all along, those who are innocent should be cleared, and those who are proven guilty in a court of law should be punished. Judging by the actions of those so-called leaders during the past year, they seem more interested in conducting a media campaign against the Republican Party than they are in seeking speedy justice. These so-called leaders of Congress want to take credit for everything. solving the energy crisis, for example, was one of the worst pieces of legislation I've ever seen. But they are unwilling to accept the responsibility other than to blame other people for what mistakes they made. If I sound a little serious tonight, I don't want to apologize, but I think this is a very serious problem we have today. Congress is not acting. For 40 years, we have conveyed the power from the duly elected officials to the presidency because we are unwilling to accept the responsibility. I am your congressman, but I am ashamed of the actions of many of the congressmen in the House because they'd rather play golf on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday and come back on Monday and supposedly work Tuesday and Wednesday and go home Thursday. But now, that's going to get back to my friends back there. I don't play golf, you know. But for all the programs of leadership, with the $300 billion we are in debt today, the programs, the giveaway programs, have not accomplished what originally was set out in Congress. If the government spent all the money the Democrats said was necessary, our income taxes would double. This isn't responsible government. It's not even good government. It's giveaway government. It's government that promises the people something for nothing and then passes the blame on up to the president. It's no wonder the president vetoed the energy bill, and I can gladly tell you I voted against it every time it came to the floor. Now, here in Alaska, we've seen these same things happen. 4 years ago, a Democrat candidate for governor promised to get Alaska back on the track. He did. Alaska is crawling along just at the same rate as we first did when we became a state, on a narrow gauge railroad track. Under the Republican leadership of Wally J. Hickle and Keith Miller, Alaska looked ahead to the future. They got the North Commission going to look for new ways of doing things. They put together $1 billion in the state's treasury for leasing Alaskan oil reserves on the North Slope. And instead of using that nest egg to help the Alaskans build new homes, start new businesses, or create new jobs, our Democrat governor played the stock market. And he lost more than $4 million. Your dollars. With Republican leadership in the State House, Alaska lived within its means. Now we have deficit budgets. The state is spending more than $200 million a year than it takes in. Well, we're back on the track, all right. As I've stated before, it's being fed with logs and chugging along on a narrow gauge track, and this state cannot afford that type of government. Alaska. And because I'm in Sitka in the coastal area, I can remember that this area, Ketchikan, Petersburg, and Wrangell, and Homer, and Puna, Haines, and Skagway, and Cordova, all these areas, voted for statehood because they thought that they would control their fisheries. They thought that they would have fisheries that would continue to contribute to the livelihood of Alaskans, that we would have some say in what the fishery policy would be. And today, Bristol Bay is closed down for the first time in the history of Alaska. Although I can't blame the governor for all of this, I can blame the governor for not taking more positive steps in the rehabilitation and actually leading the battle to see that our fisheries are protected for our fishermen. I say this to you, and it's the message I'm going to spread across the state. If Alaskans want deficit spending, if they want a government that is not working, if they want centralized government that is run from Washington, D.C., or an inactive government run from Juneau, Alaska, then I suggest that they elect Democrats. I say this statewide, state level, and nationwide. I, for one, don't think we want that type of government. This is where the Republican Party starts, with me, with you, and with each and every one of us as individuals. I think it is the Republican Party that best represents the ideals that are most important for us as Alaskans and Americans. Nobody ever came to Alaska expecting a handout, but Alaskans have always been willing to lend a helping hand to people in need who are willing to help themselves. That's the frontier spirit that built Alaska, and that sums up the philosophy of the Republican Party. Our party has had many good men who have given Alaska their best. Keith Miller, Wally Hickel, Tom Fink, Terry Miller, Clyde Lewis, Cliff Grohl, Old Thomas, and others. In the years ahead, Alaska will face tremendous challenges in Juneau and in Washington. Literally, we'll be fighting for our lives, fighting for the right to determine our own destiny as a state and as a people. I'm a Republican, and I'm proud of it. Under Republic. Under Republican leadership, we achieved statehood, settled our native land claims, and cleared the way for the construction of the pipeline. Republicans have built Alaska. All the Democrats have done is try to give it away. As Alaskans' only congressman, I have to do the best to represent all Alaskans, no matter whether they're Republicans, independents, or Democrats. I've done my job as an Alaskan first, doing those things that help my state, our state, and a Republican secondly. I'm not embarrassed to say it. I'm proud of it. It's worked. And as long as I can continue to do the job, I want to be Alaskan's congressman. I want to be the best congressman Alaska's ever had. And with your continued help, I will. A minute ago, I mentioned some names, the names of good men. And I'd like to add the names of some good women, good Republicans, and good Alaskans. We need their help to make Alaska the kind of place we want it to be, to bring back fiscal responsibility, to stop this gambling with state money, money that comes from all parties, all Alaskans, money that should be utilized wisely. Over the past 4 years, we've learned the hard way. We have seen that the Democrats can't put Alaska back on the track. We need Republicans to get us going in the right direction again. And this, again, is why I say this next election is the crucial election of your lifetime. And in a few months, we'll see democracy in action as Alaskans and people across the nation and choose the best men to represent us. Throughout my public life, from Fort Yukon City Council through the state legislature and now in the Congress, I've always marveled at our system of government. For only under our system of government would we ever have learned about Watergate. A year ago, I said Watergate would help this nation in the long run by teaching us a lesson to be more aware. If we benefit at all from the events of the past year, we will actively work together to strengthen our form of government. Just substituting one bunch of people for another won't change anything if we don't know who we are substituting them with. What we have to do is elect honest public officials and keep working long after the election to make sure they stay that way. The coming months will bring us a new political season, and we'll be seeing Republicans running head to head against other Republicans. And this is only as it should be. Each man is different. Each man has his own way of analyzing problems and solving them. Each man has his own record of achievement. In the primary, they will be jousting with ideas, and the people will decide. Many of you, I hope all of you, will be involved, working for the man you think is best able to get the job done for Alaska, whether it's in the state legislature or in a statewide office. If you're working for one man, you've got to believe he's the best qualified for the job. Otherwise, he would be second best, and nobody wants to finish second in a two-man race. But it's not for us to decide who's best. That decision will be left to the voters of Alaska. And when they've made their decisions, then we've all got to work for the men they think is best qualified to hold the public trust of political office. If we do that, then we'll all be working for Alaska, which is what each and every one of us is doing in his own way. With your efforts, Alaska will be Republican in November, a state for, by, and with the Alaskan people. Thank you.
I'm sure I can't top that in any way. However, I might steal something from Colonel Newbery and explain to Don why he hasn't seen any streakers. It seems there is a new bumper sticker out, which says, "All streakers are not equally endowed." I would like to take this opportunity on your behalf to thank C.R. Lewis for the complimentary hors d'oeuvres. C.R. There will be punch and more refreshments after dinner. A cash bar will also be open in the exhibit room. And we have to clear the hall for 20 minutes, perhaps, and then we will come back and dance away with the Jolly Jacks. Jolly Jack, whoever Jolly Jack is. Jolly Jack Cockle, I don't think so.